Water is the most basic test of state capacity. If a government cannot maintain the systems that keep taps flowing, then speeches, strategies, diplomatic maneuvers mean little to the people carrying buckets. This SONA, South Africans shouldn't just listen for plans. They should listen for proof that the machinery of delivery actually works.
I want to start with the year ago, literally the day after SONA, the water agency was supposed to come into effect 2025 on the 7th of February. And has this new institution, in your view, with all of the experience that you have in the sector, this mandate for this new, and I've heard people call it the Eskom of water. Yes. So this water agency, has it gone anywhere? Does it mean anything?
So they haven't, you know, so that was, there was a big promise and there's a lot of media hype about it, that the infrastructure, it's actually called the National Water Resource Infrastructure Agency, big word. And no, it hasn't been fully formulated yet. So it's not actually functioning as we speak.
And the problem is, was the mandate unclear?
So I think the mandate was clear, but I do think filling the positions, making sure that the money is there, making sure that there's approval at, you know, government level, that it goes to all, jumps all the hoops. But it shouldn't be taking this long. And for me, on the one hand, yes, we need this kind of agency. But on the other hand, I'm not sure whether having an ESCOM type body, which is a parastatal, deal with our water kind of takes away the kind of ownership the government should have.
Maybe paint a picture for myself and the listener. What is this agency supposed to be? What is it and what is it supposed to do?
So very simply, it's exactly in its name, which is the Water Resource Infrastructure Agency. So what they're supposed to do, this is very simple, right? Obviously, it's more complex than that, but they're supposed to source funds, so get funding, loans, get private sector involved to fund big infrastructure projects.
Okay. And the president framed it as a national priority in his SONA speech, big promise in his SONA speech. Has anything shifted from that day to this?
No. I mean, I think that thinking that this body alone would be able to be our silver bullet in the water sector is very naive. Our water sector is damaged, completely damaged. Having one body there is not going to be the solution. There has to be more things in place. And sadly, it's not there. From national government to local government, it's not there.
So what's the problem? Is it bureaucracy? Is it politics? Is it skills? Is it money?
You and why is it on that list?
Oh, all that and more?
All that and more. Because let's take it. I'll try and do as many as I can. It's the political will to understand that water is a national crisis. And we as WaterCan have called for government to declare a national disaster on our water issues, right? Let's look at municipalities. They are failing across the country. There is a wastewater treatment work in each municipality that is critical, that is spewing raw sewage into our rivers and streams. Our drinking water quality is failing. So half of our drinking water systems are now not fit for drinking. Okay, so there's the technical. We have skills, but not enough. We need more, especially in the smaller municipalities. I mean, I literally have been to a place where a municipal worker was given a bottle of bleach and told to put water into the water treatment plant. I mean, check into the water treatment plant. So you have these kind of things happening, so you definitely need more skills. You need more funding. But it's not as simple as, oh, we're bleeding, we have no money. No, when we want to throw a G20, when we want to get money for VIP cars, when we want to get money for raise and increase for councillors, then lo and behold, there's money. But when it comes to water, all of a sudden there's no water, there's no money. So we need to say that all money at every local municipality needs to ring fence the money for water and sanitation so that they rightfully spend it on the water and sanitation. That's the maintenance, the infrastructure, all of that. Then, because of government being as, I want to use words, as inept as they have been, right?
Yeah.
It has fed a kind of mafia around water and sanitation.
Sure.
So
what do you mean?
So what happens is in places like KZN, Gauteng, Eastern Cape, you have the water tanker, I'm going to say mafia, that vie for contracts. So they're given a contract in times of water outages. So they're supposed to then go and supply water to those communities. But obviously when water's back, they lose their contract. So they don't want to do that. So they go and vandalize pipes, pump stations, whatever it is, so that they can get contracts again. That's the one thing they do. The second thing they do, which is illegal, they paid to supply water to communities. The people in the trucks start charging local communities. This, let's be honest, the people that are most hardest hit by the water and sanitation issue are the most vulnerable in society. Let's start with women, the poorer communities, children. 25% of our schools don't have water. 45% of our clinics don't have water. Elderly women are using their SASSA grants to pay young men to go and fetch buckets of water for them because they can't carry the water from the water tanks. So it starts feeding this whole system. Then what happens is you have private water tank companies sprouting up all over the country. And they come and fill your JoJo tank and charge you R1 a liter. So what it happens is it feeds this kind of next level of, I would say, water provision that is not legal, that is not regulated. And then the more wealthy areas kind of lock themselves off with their JoJo tanks and their boreholes, and they feel safe. Even the boreholes. There's been the wild, wild west of borehole drilling in Gauteng at the most. And some of those borehole companies have the right documentation, but many of them don't. And they just drill and they don't know what they're doing. Hence, last year, one of them drilled the Gautrain.
Yes.
So those are the kinds of things. So government needs to, they can say, oh, this is happening. But at the end of the day, they're feeding this system that's going to be very hard to push back on.
So for real, you're also talking about an economy at play here, not just weather systems. I mean, we often hear South Africa is the most water scarce country in the world and day zero in Cape Town, in Itumela. And then on the other side, in Limpopo, Mpumalanga, we've had floods. So this is not a weather issue. It's not a scarcity issue. It's a governance and technical issue?
It's all of it.
Okay.
It is. Look, the climate issue is very real. And how you need to look at this is it's as if you're playing, you know, when you're stacking those dominoes or whatever, those blocks, as you stack them up, and it's like when you put that last one, it causes the whole thing to collapse. Right? This is what you need to look at it. It is infrastructure's failing. They have not done the maintenance. There's no budget. Then there's corruption. Then there's lack of political will. Then there's infighting. Then there's the mafia growing. And then on top of all of that, you have climate change, which then exacerbates things. Because if your infrastructure was working, if your stormwater drains were not blocked because the construction company loves throwing rubble in stormwater drains, you would have a system that could withstand some of the climate impacts. But because we can't, it becomes really hard and it becomes really harsher because between these events, I'm calling these climatic events, there's less time to recover. So you're literally destroying cities because we don't have a strong base and a foundation.
So then was the announcement or promise, as you called it, from the president. Was it actually desired to be delivered or was simply a nice soundbite to keep us all
happy,
placated?
Yeah. I mean, I think, look, one thing in the, if you're talking about Sona, it's always about, okay, what are the people feeling? We're in election year now. So what are the things on the ground? Let's put that in. We'll show we care. Let's put it in. But since then, what has the president done in terms of our water? He's promised, you know, if I can tell you, you can go and research this. The Giyani project has probably been in every Sona for the last 8 years.
When it was first promised, it was started by President Jacob Zuma.
Right. And it's not going anywhere. It's like, it's not finished. Hammanskraal has been in the papers since, you know, for about 15 years. These are big issues. Lesotho Highlands Water Project has been delayed for 10 years because of corruption in the then Department of Water and Sanitation. So all of these things come into the Sona and it's nice to have, but no, I think the nice to have, I think people are, in a sense, South Africans are like, I hope, heartful of the promises and the empty promises, as empty as our taps. We need to have clear actions. This is what we're doing by this time. This is how transparent it's going to be. And then it allows us as ordinary people to keep track of it.
So, I mean, it's also been fascinating. You say it's an election year, so there's lots of big outbursts. And very interested to see a couple of weeks ago, tensions between Tshwane, Pretoria and Jerusalem being heightened because of the Eastern Cape and promises with Dalinje, with the prince, the chief Dalinje,
yes.
and the promise of some kind of water infrastructure partnership. So now that also has brought geopolitics into
place.
And we've watched quite a big escalation there with senior diplomats at both Israel and South Africa being. What does this mean then? You know, this geopolitical tension and the kind of risks.
Yes. I wrote something about water wars many years ago. And the water wars were first discussed late 80s, early 90s, where the idea was between countries that was what's going to happen. But I say that if we privatize and if we start having some provinces better than others, you would, and you don't have a national look at the water. And remember, our constitution protects that water belongs to all of us. If we don't have that, if we let go of that, we'll start having fighting amongst ourselves, amongst provinces for water rights. And that can be quite dangerous. Let me give you a very simple example. This is in its crudest form. When people have had this outage now for 21 days in Melville, when the water tank came.
Melville and Midrand, yes. No?
Midrand's been a short thing. Midrand's been a short stint of the whole. Melville, Claremont, Coronation, Greenside, Park, they've been going through this for years. This is the first time it hit Midrand and everyone's like, oh, Midrand. No, it's hit everyone for years. People were fighting in the queue at the water tanker because the businesses and the more richer people were paying the tanker guys to get more water. So they take off like 10 20-liter buckets when other people are standing in the queue, and then when they get there, there's no water. That is one aspect. The other aspect is that people think our situation is so bad, just call in the private sector. Just give it to them to run. It's not that easy. If you look at the UK, they gave their water and sanitation systems to the private, and now they're dealing with the fact that people can't drink their water and you can't swim in those canals. They're completely polluted. So private doesn't necessarily mean better.